Welcome back to Meteorology Matters, where we dig into the ways weather, shapes our world. I'm your host, and today we're looking at a topic that's especially relevant given Florida's recent record-breaking heat, the risks facing outdoor workers. Even more so with some new legislation on the scene.
Yeah, it's a fascinating area because while most folks are thinking about staying warm this time of year, Florida's climate makes it a year-round concern. And that intersection of weather policy and worker safety is always complex.
For sure. Let's paint the picture for our listeners. We know Florida's hot, but we're not talking typical summer days here.
Yeah.
2024 saw the hottest April and May on record, and some areas had over 40 days, with a heat index topping 105 degrees Fahrenheit just last summer.
Wow, those numbers are striking. And what's concerning is the trend they represent. Projections show this intensifying, with some areas possibly facing up to 100 days a year above the 105-degree heat index by mid-century.
That heat index is key, right? It's not just the air temperature that's brutal, but how humidity makes it feel even hotter. It's one thing to have dry heat, but Florida's humidity is like that extra layer of oppressive heat, making it really hard for the body to cool down naturally.
Exactly. And that's where the danger lies, especially for those working outdoors for extended periods. Their bodies are under constant strain trying to regulate temperature, and the longer that goes on, the higher the risk of heat-related illnesses.
Now, layer on top of this already challenging situation, Florida's HB 433, which became law last July. This legislation essentially prevents local governments from setting their own heat safety rules for outdoor workers.
This is where things get interesting from a policy standpoint. You have existing federal regulations, but this new law restricts what local communities can do, even if they feel more stringent measures are needed. Naturally, this has stirred up quite a bit of debate.
For sure. On one side, you have folks like Representative Rick Roth, a farmer himself, who argue that the federal guidelines are enough and that extra local rules just burden businesses.
But then there are advocacy groups and others who are deeply worried. Their view is that this law puts business interests ahead of worker well-being, potentially leading to more heat-related illnesses and even deaths, especially among groups like migrant workers who might already be more vulnerable.
And that brings us to the human impact of this all, because it's easy to get lost in the numbers, but we have real stories like that of Christina Lopez, a migrant worker from Guatemala. She collapsed from heat exhaustion at a plant nursery and was actually reprimanded for taking a break.
It's heartbreaking. And sadly, not an isolated incident. There's Francisco, a teenager who fainted twice while working long shifts without sufficient water or breaks. He now deals with tinnitus and anxiety related to the heat, showcasing the potential long-term consequences even for younger, healthier individuals.
And then there's the case of Efrain Lopez Garcia, who died on a fruit farm during that intense heat wave in July of 23. While officially attributed to other health factors, it really brought to light the risks many outdoor workers face, especially migrants who might hesitate to speak up about unsafe conditions due to language barriers or fear of losing their jobs.
These stories underscore the human cost of extreme heat and highlight the need to understand not just the immediate risks, but also the potential for lasting impacts on individuals' health and well-being. It's a multifaceted issue that demands attention on several levels. It's crucial to acknowledge that, these individual experiences are part of a larger pattern with economic and health implications that reach far beyond, individual workers.
That's a good point. It's not just about individual health. There's a ripple effect.
Yeah.
What kind of broader impacts are we talking about here?
Well, consider this. The International Labor Organization found that when temperatures climb to 79 degrees Fahrenheit, productivity takes a hit. And at 93 degrees, it plummets by a staggering 50%. Think about the implications for businesses, industries, and the overall economy.
Wow, a 50% drop in productivity. That's huge. It makes you wonder how sustainable it is to expect folks to work at their best when they're battling that kind of heat.
Right.
And I imagine those lost work hours translate into some hefty economic losses.
You're absolutely right. Projections show that by 2050, Florida could be losing millions of work hours every year due to heat stress, potentially costing the state's economy billions of dollars annually. And that's not even factoring in the added burden on the healthcare system as heat-related illnesses rise.
Right. That economic strain raises the question, what role should the federal government play in protecting workers? We touched on existing federal regulations, but you mentioned a proposed rule from the Biden administration, right?
Yes. There's a proposal to require employers to take steps to mitigate heat hazards when the heat index reaches 80 degrees Fahrenheit. That would include mandatory paid rest periods at 90 degrees. If passed, this rule could provide a crucial layer of protection for outdoor workers across the country, including those in Florida.
Okay, that sounds promising.
Yeah.
But wouldn't a federal rule like that face pushback from states like Florida that have already passed laws limiting local regulations? It seems like there's a tension brewing between state and federal authority when it comes to worker safety and public health.
There's definitely a debate unfolding about where the authority lies and how to strike a balance between protecting workers and respecting states' rights. This tension is playing out in other states too, like Texas, where a state law blocking local heat safety rules is facing legal challenges.
So it seems this legal wrangling over who gets to decide how to protect workers from extreme heat is far from over. But beyond the legalities, there's a fundamental ethical question here, isn't there? What responsibility do employers have to ensure their workers' safety, especially as we're seeing more frequent and intense heat waves?
Absolutely. It's a question of values and priorities. On one hand, businesses need to be profitable, and some see regulations as an obstacle to that. On the other hand, workers are the backbone of any economy, and their health and safety should be paramount. Finding that balance is crucial, and maybe the concept of shared responsibility is key here.
Shared responsibility? I'm intrigued. What does that look like in practice?
It acknowledges that both employers and employees have a role to play in ensuring safe working conditions. Employers can implement heat safety protocols, provide ample shade and water, and educate workers on the dangers of heat stress. But workers also need to take personal responsibility for their well-being, staying hydrated, recognizing the signs of heat exhaustion, and speaking up if they feel unsafe.
So it's about fostering a two-way street where open communication and a shared commitment to safety are paramount.
Exactly. And let's not forget the emotional and psychological toll that extreme heat can take. Think back to Francisco's story. Imagine the anxiety he must feel every time he gets back on that hot truck knowing the heat could trigger another episode. Those experiences have lasting impacts.
It's a powerful reminder that we need to consider the whole picture, not just the physical risks, but also the emotional and mental well-being of workers. And for migrant workers, those risks are compounded by language barriers, cultural differences, and sometimes even fear of deportation, making it that much harder to advocate for themselves or report unsafe conditions. It creates a real power imbalance.
And that's why the work of organizations like WeCount is so important. They're working on the ground in South Florida, providing resources, education, and a voice for these vulnerable workers. They even offer first aid training where workers learn essential skills like CPR and the importance of staying hydrated with electrolytes.
That's great. It's heartening to see groups like WeCount stepping up to address these critical needs, especially where official protections might be lacking. Ultimately, tackling this multifaceted challenge requires a comprehensive approach. We need stronger regulations, greater awareness, and a fundamental shift in our culture to recognize the inherent value and dignity of all workers, no matter their immigration status.
I couldn't agree more. It's about going beyond political rhetoric and acknowledging that real lives are at stake. We need a system where workers feel empowered to speak up about unsafe conditions without fearing retaliation, and where employers recognize that investing in worker safety is not just ethically sound, but also good business practice.
That's a crucial point. It's not just about doing the right thing. It's about recognizing that a healthy, safe workforce is a productive workforce.
Exactly. And even those of us who aren't outdoor workers can play a role in promoting heat safety and advocating for policies that protect vulnerable communities. Staying informed about the dangers of extreme heat checking on our neighbors and making our voices heard are all actions we can take.
It's about building a culture of shared responsibility and recognizing that we all have a stake in this.
And let's not forget the importance of data and science in guiding our decisions. The statistics you shared about the economic impact of heat stress and the rising rates of heat-related illnesses are powerful tools for advocating for change. Evidence-based policymaking is essential, especially with issues like climate change and worker safety, which are undeniably intertwined.
Absolutely. And speaking of climate change, we can't ignore the elephant in the room here. We're already seeing its impact in Florida, from rising sea levels to more frequent and intense heat waves. It's a global issue with far-reaching consequences.
You're right. The UN Secretary General recently warned that heat stress at work is projected to cost the global economy trillions of dollars by 2030. It's a stark reminder that climate change is not some distant threat. It's happening now, and it's disproportionately impacting those who are already vulnerable, including outdoor workers, the elderly, and low-income communities.
It's a sobering reality check. But it also underscores the urgency of taking action. We need to transition to a cleaner, more sustainable economy, invest in climate adaptation measures, and ensure everyone has access to the resources and support they need to cope with the challenges of a changing climate.
It's about fostering resilience, driving innovation, and fundamentally shifting our mindset. We need to move past the idea of climate change as a problem for future generations and recognize that it's a defining challenge of our time, demanding our immediate attention and collective action.
It's a call to action for all of us. And the choices we make today will shape the world we leave for future generations. It's a responsibility we simply can't afford to ignore. But coming back to our original question, what role do employers have in protecting their workers from this growing threat of extreme heat? It's a complex issue, and there are no easy answers.
That complexity is precisely why these conversations are so important. They force us to confront uncomfortable truths, to grapple with ethical dilemmas, and to consider how our actions impact others.
It feels like we're at a crossroads, you know, where we need to balance economic considerations with the very real human impact of extreme heat. How do we move forward in a way that protects both workers and the bottom line?
Yeah, that's the million-dollar question, isn't it? I think it calls for informed leadership. Policymakers, business leaders, community advocates, folks who are willing to let science guide their decisions, understand the nuances of this challenge, and collaborate on solutions that safeguard both workers and the economy.
It's a real paradigm shift, moving away from that old profits over people mentality towards a more comprehensive approach that acknowledges the interconnectedness of our economy, our environment, and the well-being of our workforce.
Exactly. And, you know, I'm seeing signs of that shift already, even if it's gradual. More and more companies are realizing that investing in employee well-being, including heat safety measures, can actually improve productivity and lower healthcare costs over time.
It's that old adage, right? An ounce of prevention is worth a pound of cure. Taking proactive steps to mitigate heat risks creates a safer, healthier, and ultimately more productive work environment.
For sure. And we can't overlook the role of technology in all of this. We have incredible tools at our disposal that can help us understand and manage heat risks more effectively. Think about wearable sensors that track workers' body temperature and heart rate, real-time weather alerts that provide early warnings of extreme heat events, and even predictive modeling that helps us anticipate future heat waves and prepare accordingly.
It's amazing how technology empowers us to make smarter decisions and protect ourselves from the elements. But it's not just about having the technology. It's about using it responsibly and making sure it's accessible to everyone, especially those who are most vulnerable.
Absolutely. We need to bridge the digital divide and ensure all workers have access to the information and resources they need to stay safe in a changing climate, regardless of their socioeconomic status or technological literacy.
It all comes back to equity, accessibility, and that commitment to leaving no one behind. But let's bring it back to the individual. What can each of us do in our daily lives to promote heat safety and build climate resilience?
Well, it begins with awareness. We need to educate ourselves about the dangers of extreme heat. Learn to recognize the signs of heat-related illness and take proactive steps to protect ourselves and those around us. Simple things like staying hydrated, wearing light clothing, and avoiding strenuous activity during the hottest parts of the day can make a world of difference.
And we shouldn't underestimate the power of community. Checking on our neighbors, especially the elderly or those living alone. Lending a hand to those in need and advocating for policies that promote heat safety and climate resilience. These are all ways we can contribute to a more caring and supportive society.
It's recognizing that we're all in this together, and collective action is the key to tackling the challenges of a changing climate. Whether it's supporting organizations on the front lines of climate change, contacting our elected officials to push for stronger climate policies, or simply making more sustainable choices in our everyday lives. Every action, big or small, makes a difference.
It's about empowering ourselves and each other to create positive change. And as we've learned today, even small ripples can create waves.
Well said. It's been a truly insightful discussion, and I appreciate you shedding light on this crucial issue.
It's been a pleasure. And to our listeners, remember that knowledge is power. The more we understand about the challenges we face, the better equipped we are to find solutions and build a brighter future for ourselves and future generations. And don't forget to follow meteorologist Rob Jones on Instagram, meteorologist, on TikTok, TV meteorologist, and on YouTube, follow Rob Jones Hurricane, where you can also find the Meteorology Matters podcast playlist.
Until next time, stay cool, stay informed, and stay engaged.